The Local Thread. Hello, greetings. Welcome to A Moment of Truth. I'm Fletcher Word, publisher of the Sojourner's Truth, and today we are going to discuss some things that are happening within the Toledo business community, some efforts to improve the economy of this community through the development of small businesses. Today's discussion will be hosted by the publisher of Pursuit magazine, Stacy Fowler. In today's Moment of Truth, Stacy will be speaking with several business owners who have had the experience of starting and maintaining and growing a business, and who can share that experience with our listeners. She will also speak with someone with an organization that is providing guidance and assistance to budding entrepreneurs and small business owners in the community. Enjoy today's Moment of Truth.
Welcome to Moment of Truth. I'm Stacy Fowler, publisher of Pursuit magazine, and today I'm hosting a business conversation centered on entrepreneurship and impact. Joining me today is Eric Johnson of the Ivy Entrepreneur Institute. It's a nonprofit with over 20-something years experience mentoring new and small business owners and improving quality of life through entrepreneurship. Eric, thank you for being here. I am glad to have you.
Thank you for having me, Stacy.
Oh, thank you.
Pleasure's mine.
Yes. So before we get started on what you do at the Ivy Entrepreneur Institute, tell me a little bit about you. What was your journey like into the business and entrepreneurship?
Well, my journey into entrepreneurship started actually as a spin out of a company that I was working for in the construction industry. So I used to work for a large local construction company here locally. And while on assignment in Florida, after that conclusion of that assignment, I was going to start a business. So at the time, I was reporting to the president and founder of that company, and he suggested that I come back to Toledo and start my business because at the time, they needed a relationship with a minority business enterprise that they didn't have, and I needed business opportunity. So it seemed like it was a really good match. And a great opportunity for me. So that's how I started my business, my first business, actually.
Oh, okay. We'll get into that, right? So what was there a specific moment? I mean, you were down in Florida. What was it about that opportunity and that conversation that made you think, maybe I can do this?
Well, I always had an entrepreneurial spirit in me growing up. You know, I've been a paper boy. I used to cut lawns as a kid. Always did a little things to raise some money during my high school and college years. And so I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, always wanted to be a business owner. I just didn't know what time was right. And that opportunity presented the right timing.
Right.
So it's all about timing in a lot of instances.
Yes, yes. So did that boss of yours become your mentor into when you started your business?
He did. He did. He assisted me in helping me to finance my business, but not only to finance my business, but to provide us opportunity to do business, but also shared some of his many years of experience with me on how to navigate the economy that we was looking at, which we was doing a lot of business with Ford Motor Company and that large commercial industrial type business, construction business. So yeah, Mr. Fritz Rudolph actually was a mentor for many, many years, and I still have a great relationship with his son, Bill Rudolph, to this day.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Now I know that is the for-profit part of your what you do, right? The entrepreneurship. So let's start talking about Ivy Entrepreneur Institute. What inspired you to create that? And, you know, what problem were you trying to solve when you started it?
So during the early years of my for-profit business, a lot of people used to come to me about, hey, why don't you help me start a business? Or maybe we can go into business. At the time, I was trying to scale a business, so I didn't have a lot of time to be helping people go into business or starting business. So about 12 years into that first business, I had decided to actually get out of construction. And I wanted to start a business that was focused on developing people, places, and things.
Yeah.
People, houses in a community, and a community in general. Henceforth, Ivy Development Agency. And so I looked at it and was like, you know, actually there's nobody that looks like me with experience like me that's really in the marketplace helping other people start businesses.
Right.
And because I've had this experience on how to start a business from nothing and scale a business, I decided that I was going to share my experiences and knowledge with others to help them to accomplish what I had accomplished.
Oh, wow. So when you look back at those early years, what were some of the biggest challenges in building a nonprofit that was focused on entrepreneurship specifically?
So the biggest challenge that I had was because of my target market segmentation, the people that I wanted to help, which is low to moderate income individuals located in urban areas, would they be able to afford the solution? Obviously not. So finding individuals that could support the institute that could pay for the solution on behalf of those that we was providing solutions to.
Wow.
That was the biggest challenge, especially coming from a for-profit world where you're selling your solution directly to the end user. Now you have to shift where you have to get kind of a beneficiary in order to support the nonprofit efforts for the benefactor. So that was a big challenge, understanding the dynamics of the nonprofit world and how to fund a nonprofit so that you can deliver that solution.
Let's talk about your mission. So your mission is to improve the quality of life for low to moderate income, like you just said, right? What does quality of life really mean in the context of your work?
Quality of life for me in the context of our work means providing individuals with opportunity to make decisions. To pursue what America has to offer.
Okay.
A lot of times we find ourselves in situations where whether we're employee or embarking on an entrepreneurial journey, that we're spending an awful lot of time committed to whatever that endeavor is. And that time that we spend committed to that endeavor takes away from time of those that you really love and sometimes need to actually care for.
Yeah.
So improving the quality of life for me gives a person an opportunity to decide what they really want to do and pursue what they really want to do and be able to support themselves in America.
So can you share a story? Do you have a story of someone that you've impacted?
So I want to say, man, maybe now, probably a decade or so ago, there was a young lady who has started an insurance business. And she was getting assistance. And because of the assistance that she was getting, she had to go into a work program. Well, I needed someone to do some data entry for me. So I reached out to our local government agency that provided the assistance for the work program, and they had assigned her to me. So through our relationship, help her to develop and scale her insurance business, but not only to help her and scale her insurance business, but to start another business that was a vegan food business called Eco Vegan. So she scaled that business to the point where she eventually came off the assistance.
Nice.
Supported her three boys through her business, and recently, as of last year, had moved to New Orleans, still has Eco Vegan, still doing the insurance, and is living her best quality of life.
There you go. That must make you feel good.
It does.
Okay, that's awesome. So what kind of other barriers do you see most often for newer small business owners, you know, and how does that How does your organization help them move past those barriers?
I think, you know, some of the barriers that young entrepreneurs coming out of what we call ideation or concept stage into startup, obviously, is access to capital. That's a big challenge for any business. But I think even more importantly is understanding that in business, you are a solution provider, and the solution that you provide must match up to a problem. So identifying the problem that you're going to solve and making sure that there is enough of that problem that exists to sustain and scale that business. A lot of times we start businesses based on maybe something we like to do or something that we may be fairly good at doing, but that doesn't always translate into other people's needs. That's just your need. And you can't support yourself because you got to sell a solution. So you got to make sure that the problem exists in the marketplace and that there's enough of that problem that you can sell a solution, exchange currency for a solution to problem over some period of time that you can scale this business.
That seems like, you know, a given sometimes, right? But I know that when you're mentoring people, this must come up as an actual, you know, point for them to consider. So let's talk about your mentoring. You talk about one-on-one mentoring, right? Why is it such a personal approach for you and so important compared to one-size-fits-all model?
Well, for me, I recognize that, one, there's different learning styles. Two, there's different life experiences. So as different as our life experiences is and our learning styles is has to be the way that you go about coaching, mentoring, growing, helping someone grow has to be personalized. One size doesn't fit everyone. So you can maybe talk about some general things from a maybe 50-foot level, but getting down to the details of how they're going to navigate this new career path, entrepreneurship, it's unique in each circumstance. So that one-on-one mentoring helps to develop, one, a comfortability of relationship with the client to make sure that they're comfortable to talk about all the things that could have an effect on this journey, their history, their current situation, their future, where they want to be at. And sometimes that's not easy, or you won't get that in a group setting. So it's important to do a one-on-one. Even though we do classes and we have group settings, there's always a follow-up after that class for that one-on-one consultation moving forward.
Yeah. So when you do the group settings, because I know you host seminars, right? What topics seem to resonate with most entrepreneurs right now that you can teach in some type of group setting?
Big one is marketing, of course, how to get that solution, that product out, that service out into the marketplace. But the main thing that keeps cropping up after people actually start these businesses is the accounting and the financial side, making sure that they're accounting for their business activity. So when they go to seek funding for it, capital, they have the proper financial documentation to support their business activity. And that's a big challenge with access to capital, is making sure you can prove what you say you're doing.
Right, right. And I would imagine that once you feel that they're ready to actually, you know, join a partnership or actually get funding, whichever, how do you recognize or how do you help your clients get those partnerships and those contracts? And because I would imagine that's part of what you do at Ivy Entrepreneur Institute, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. We always trying to link people up with opportunity.
Right.
Of course, because of my tenure in the business, I've met a few people over the years and developed some pretty decent relationships with the marketplace and people in the marketplace. So, you know, you can't do this alone. You need clients, you need customers, you need individuals that has the ability to support you and lift you up in the areas that you weak in. So you're always looking for relationships that can help do that. And I'm always looking for relationships for our clients that can do that. Yesterday, I had a young lady in who just graduated through the Cherry Street Missions Workforce Development Program, and she needed some assistance with a couple of agencies that she wanted to connect with. So I was able to provide her with some names and some numbers to contact and reach out, and she can use my name as the individual who directed her there to help her link with those agencies. And they're agencies that can provide her some opportunity for the solution that she offers. So it's important to leverage these relationships so that people can grow and build their network.
Right.
You know, because the larger your network is, you know, there's an old saying that at least I have, frequency breeds familiarity. And familiarity leads to opportunity.
There you go.
So the more you know me, because the more I'm around you, the more you get to know me. And the more you get to know me, the more you're comfortable with me.
All right. So as you look forward to the future, let's talk about that. What's next for Ivy Entrepreneur Institute?
I think the next thing for Ivy Entrepreneur Institute is to create a digital platform. Because we're limited by time and space. So I want to create a platform where people are not limited by time and space. For example, a lot of women are parents who have children. Their time, optimal time for opportunity to for self-development comes right after they drop their children off at school, usually before noon. So they're limited in amount of time. So if we can create a digital platform to provide education that's seamless because you can access it on any device at your time, then that helps, again, to deliver this solution in a more efficient, effective way because now people can access it because they're not limited by space, place, or time.
Okay, so let's see. For somebody who's listening right now, who has an idea but doubts themselves, what would you want them to hear today?
That fear is not an emotion that is natural. Fear is an emotion that is derived from environmental circumstances. So if you can overcome fear, and fear is usually triggered by not succeeding or failing. And remember that if you don't remember anything, that failure is part of success. So everyone who is successful has failed multiple times in their life. So if failure, the fear of failure is stopping you, just get rid of that fear and use failure as a tool to succeed. You learn from it. You get over it. I got a saying, if we're going to fail, let's fail fast. Let's get there and get over it so we can learn from it, utilize it in our next steps, and keep moving. So I'll tell anybody, get over the fear. Just do it. Don't worry about it. Don't analyze it to death. Just start doing it, and you'll learn from there. You'll get comfortable with it.
Thank you for that. This has been a great conversation. Do you have a website? How can people get in touch with you?
Sure. They can visit the letter I, the letter V, institute.org. The letter I, the letter V, institute.org.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here today and talking with our audience.
Thank you for having me, Stacey.
Okay. Welcome back to A Moment of Truth. Now we're back here with Terry Parker. Terry Parker of T. Parker & Co. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So before we get started into your business, Terry, talk a little bit about what started you on your path. Why did you start think that you wanted to do something in creative branding and marketing?
I've always been in the creative space. It goes all the way back to elementary, first grade, if you can believe that. Oh, absolutely. I've always been artistic, or so I was told. That's what many said around me. So, but I do remember, I vividly remember having a profound interest in the arts. And once my parents realized that, they immediately enrolled me at the TMA, Toledo Museum of Art. Oh, okay. I took classes early on throughout elementary and well into junior high. That was my place. I looked forward to going over to the museum and taking classes. Mm-hmm. Later on in high school, I actually participated in art competitions, and I had artwork displayed at the Seagate Center.
Oh, my.
And I remember receiving a certificate of excellence from Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur. I still have that,
as a
matter of fact. And then it was just a natural progression for me to go into creative. So from high school, I went on to Bowling Green State University, where I pursued a degree in graphic design and communication. So it's just been there. It's embedded.
Really? What was the defining moment? You went to Bowling Green State University. Did you leave college then going directly into your career?
As a matter of fact, I did.
You did.
Upon graduation, I landed a job. It was one of the few, if not the only, minority-owned advertising agency in Toledo, and the name was O'Neill Livingston and Lee. And there I became the senior art director there.
Wow.
And then shortly after that, maybe a few years, I moved on to Fruchman in Rosen, where I was part of the creative team there, and then finally moved to Detroit and started my own business.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
You started your business in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The partners at O'Neill Livingston and Lee, they severed, and one of the partners invited me to join them to form a new agency.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So then how did you land back in Toledo?
Well, we did very successful in Detroit.
Okay, great.
First and foremost, we had some very lucrative accounts there. Mm-hmm. Launched a healthcare, it was actually a health program there.
Okay.
And then it was called Life Choice. And that went very well. We had city accounts and things of that sort. And
then
we just kind of decided to grow in separate directions.
Okay.
So at that point, I came back to Toledo. And I think that at that moment, I was on the cusp of, do I go with another creative agency?
Right.
Or what do I do? Do I try to start my own?
Okay.
And so at that point, I started teaching art classes at the university.
Oh, wow.
For little kids on the weekends. And then there was a lady at The Blade, Lenita Goings, that invited me to come over to The Blade to kind of fill in the marketing department because they had people on vacation. So what started out as a favor to just kind of help out, and 13 and a half years later,
oh my, you were with The Blade
and
for
several
that
positions.
Okay.
I was there for 13 and a half years.
Oh my.
So, creative director.
And then you restarted your
I don't know if it was a restart. So after servicing there at The Blade, I went from filling in to creative director in the marketing department.
Oh, okay.
Met some really cool people got a chance to work on both sides of the house, as they call it. Although we were on the marketing side, we work very closely to the editorial side. At that point, I met Rhonda and Rhonda Sewell, some really cool people work mm-hmm. there. She and I worked together. We launched nice. Magazines for the Blade. So we were instrumental in bringing some really cool products to the wow. Blade. During our tenure there, we actually went to Chicago and Rhonda interviewed Kenneth Cole. Oh. And Donna Karen
oh, nice.
For a magazine that we had launched at the Blade back then. And so we were able to collab and bring some really cool products that were very unconventional for mm-hmm. a newspaper.
Okay.
We also had the pleasure of interviewing Mayor Jack Ford.
Right.
And he made the cover of the magazine. We called it Toledo Magazine at the time. And
oh,
I think
goodness.
Our cover story was You Don't Know Jack. And it was really cool. Very, very
That's
cool
nice.
Editorial piece. So.
Okay. So yeah. then you stayed there, you said 13 years?
13 and a half years.
So at what point did you decide it's time to go back to?
Well, yeah. I was really I felt it first of all mm-hmm. in my spirit.
Okay.
You just know when it's time to grow forward,
mm-hmm.
and so I was kind of on the fence because I, you know, after being loyal to a company for 13 and a half years, you don't really want to just leave because, you know, yeah. we have a whole new work family.
Right.
The chemistry was there. But at the same time, the newspaper industry was going through its own change. They were going, a lot of them were going from the ROP, run of press,
okay.
And converting over to digital.
Okay.
And many newspapers were scaling down. They were merging. And so at that point, they went through just kind of a transition. So mm-hmm. a lot of people were being laid off. And at that point, I was one of the first
okay.
that was laid off from my position. And fortunately for me, probably a week or two prior to that, I had mm-hmm. already opened up. I had an office.
Oh,
and so
yeah
I acquired my
preparing.
Own space.
Yeah.
I was. The
yeah.
writing was there, and
right.
it was public information. It was
okay.
just an industry change in newspapers.
So now you've been doing business again for yourself for over 15 years, or how long has it been?
Yeah. Actually, it is 20 years.
Oh, my
in
goodness.
2026.
Okay.
So September 2026, T. Parker and Company will hit its 20-year mark.
Oh, my. Well, congratulations on that. That's,
yes,
that's longevity. So what were some of the early challenges of you starting your business again?
Of course, as all entrepreneurs would have it, financing is always a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, fortunate for me, it came up on the time where we were, I was laid off. And so I did have sort of a nest egg just from working at
okay.
the Blade.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to reinvest in myself, so to speak. And at that point, I was pretty determined, though, not to jump into debt.
Okay.
So it was a lot of sweat equity.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity goes beyond graphic design.
Okay.
You have to be creative in your thoughts
mm-hmm.
and be very purposeful in your steps.
Okay.
It required a lot of budgeting because I was at the time a single parent and very big on education.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, my village, my parents, and I have a large family in Alabama.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they come together and they came to bat and here we are.
Oh, that's
I'm still
nice.
There.
And now I know that in your business, your purpose centers on designing with intention and delivering as promised, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
absolutely.
That's very huge for you. What does design with purpose really mean for you?
Anybody can, well, not anybody, but many people, mm-hmm. especially with the tools we have now. You have a lot of design tools and mm-hmm. and AI, with the onset of AI right. injecting itself. And it's a beautiful thing, but it's a tool.
Right.
So you can design pretty pictures all day. But if it doesn't have the impact or purpose, then mm-hmm. it's just another pretty picture.
Right.
I think when we go into any design process, one of my biggest focus is to know your why. Why are you designing? Mm. Are you designing with a particular message in mind? Are you designing with respect for others? Are you properly representing the target audience that you're designing this for? And if you're not, if your messaging is not intentional, and if it's not bringing purpose to the content, then why do it?
Well, okay, so the other part of that, what does delivering as promised mean to you?
Everything we do is in the spirit of excellence. Hmm. So with that in mind, we deliver on time, as promised, and beyond client expectations.
Mm, okay. So tell me, too, what common branding or marketing mistakes do you see businesses making? How can they course correct?
Oh, I think one of the biggest mistakes they make is they don't understand their clients.
Yeah.
They don't understand their clients' needs. And more importantly, they don't understand that the target audience or the people that are actually viewing mm. the material that they're designing. I think that even as clients, a lot of decisions are made on as relates to the overall business. They inject a lot of personal preferences and their own, but they fail to realize that a lot of the material, a lot of the content is not designed for them,
mm-hmm,
but maybe
mm-hmm.
for their client
right.
or their customer.
Yeah.
So when you can effectively communicate that to your client
right.
and get them to understand, I respect what you want. However, this is not for you.
Right? Okay.
This is for your customer. Yes. If you could get past that barrier, you're doing great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's something I never would have thought about. So for business owners that are listening, okay, who may feel overwhelmed by marketing, what advice would you give them as far as how they should view marketing for
well,
their business?
I think particularly for small businesses and startups,
mm-hmm.
don't be afraid. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, then I invite you to reach out to do your research first
yeah.
and reach out to those that do understand marketing.
Right.
Many times people are reluctant to reach out because they say, oh, I can't afford that.
I know, a lot of people hear that a lot.
And that's, a deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
When actually people call me all the time and say, hey, Terry, can I stop by? Or I heard you were referred to me by.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some time to talk? And because I am an educator at heart, I do like educating. I forgot that part. I did
mm-hmm.
teach design at the College of Design in Detroit. But I can't think of a person that I've ever turned away. Or
right.
invited to stop by my office to sit down for a free consultation.
So they should just reach out.
Just reach out.
Yeah.
Find out what
you don't know.
Yes, absolutely.
So what would you want to leave our audience with? Is there something we haven't talked about that you think they should know about marketing?
I would say don't underestimate the power of a small business, any small business,
mm-hmm.
in any industry, especially marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get past your preconceived notions of what an agency can and cannot bring to the table.
Right, right.
Because great things come out of small packages, and I think, and small businesses. And people would be surprised, particularly in Northwest Ohio, the number of small businesses that are doing great things.
Okay.
And many times, because we are small, we don't have the resources to promote ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that we aren't doing impactful work.
Okay.
And case in point, we just wrapped up a very sizable project with the National Association of City and County Health Officials.
Mm.
Coin NACHO.
Okay.
And we just completed a online resource center,
mm-hmm.
For use by all of the health departments across the country.
Oh, wow.
We didn't necessarily put it in the media or do a press release,
right.
Because we were busy doing the business of,
yeah.
building this resource center.
Okay.
And it's up, it's running, and we're very proud of it.
Oh, my gosh, congratulations.
Yeah, it's things like that.
So you mentioned how people can just call you up. Do you have a website or a Facebook page or something?
I do.
What is that?
tparkernco.com.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with our next guest. Welcome back. We are now joined by my next guest, Mr. Quan McKittrick.
Welcome, Quan. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. So, Quan, before we get to talking about Jackson Management and Development, let's start with you, okay? What drew you to construction and HVAC work in the first place?
Well, I would say it was in my will.
Yeah.
It was in my will. So, actually, I wanted to be a basketball player.
Okay.
I had my dream set out to hooping.
Yeah.
And nothing else meant anything but just playing basketball. So,
yeah. A lot of young men do that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yes.
And then?
So, then I had had two lower back surgeries.
Oh, wow.
So, I had got injured. And I had to think on, oh, man, how am I going to make $1 million and not playing basketball no more?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what kind of led me to using my mind and my skill and developing skills with my hands.
Yeah. Was there an early relationship with building or fixing or something like that that made you think of doing things with your hands to make your money?
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. It was my father.
Okay.
And growing up, my father was good with his hands, a great carpenter. He can make anything out of wood.
Oh, nice.
And he had rental properties and buy buildings, fix them up, renovate them, and make them to where they operational.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I was a part of, he had bought an apartment building and turned the downstairs into a beauty salon.
Wow.
And it was booming.
Yeah.
It had about 12 chairs in there,
okay.
Beauticians and nail technicians, and everybody bringing him money on Fridays. I think I like this. Let me learn a bit.
I said, okay, maybe I can make $1 million doing this, right?
Yeah.
Tell me, building the business, okay? Jackson Management Development has been in business for, over 9 years?
Yes, it has.
Very nice. So what were those early days like when you started?
It was a lot of learning and
mm-hmm.
learning how to run a business and a lot of what direction I wanted to go in
mm-hmm.
as far as what service I was going to provide, what skills I was going to obtain.
Okay.
And putting them to work.
Uh-huh, for sure. So you got your HVAC license first, right? Is that where you started?
Well,
talking about skills.
Actually, when I didn't have any many skills, I used to cut grass.
Oh, okay.
Because I started cutting grass when I was 12.
Oh,
so
wow.
I took that skill and built it up mm-hmm. and moved on. By the time I was 18, I had a couple rental properties myself.
Okay.
Fixed them up, rented them out.
Nice.
And then it went from there. And then I believe in like 2012 mm-hmm. is when I went to go and get my HVAC credentials to become an HVAC technician.
Wow. So you do residential and commercial projects, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so how has your company grown or shifted in the industry, and how have your client expectations evolved? So did you start with residential and then move to commercial?
Yes, I did. I started with residential and doing my own thing, and it started to develop into providing a service for other people. And originally, I didn't take HVAC to provide the service for the community.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing it to provide the service for my own rental properties.
Oh,
because
okay.
I had a blower motor go out, and he charged me about $850. And I watched him do it.
Right.
I said, oh, no.
I can do that for myself.
No, I definitely can do that. So I took that knowledge and went to on a search
right.
to find a school,
oh.
you know, to find a school that I can go to and to get that credential.
Well, tell us about that process of finding a school. What was that like, that whole process of going to school and being certified?
Well, my life been a journey.
Mm-hmm.
I found something online that was in Florida, and they were offering it for free, grant situation, but that ended up being a scam, and I didn't get my credentials. And then I had came across another opportunity because I always been on a search for knowledge.
Okay.
And
okay.
To see what's out there in the community for me to learn something,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I came across the opportunity where I could go, and it's like a motivational class that I took
okay.
to keep me motivated. I read books. I like to, and drive and read and listen to audio books.
Right.
So staying motivated and trying to keep my mind towards what I'm going to do next, because it's not going to be basketball no more.
Right.
So I went to that motivational class. It was about a week. At the end of the class, some schools, trade schools, had came in, and one of them was Penna.
Oh,
so
nice.
I was like, oh, yeah, there's my opportunity right there.
Yes,
so
yes.
I went and took advantage of that and stuck in there, and that's how I became an HVAC technician.
Very good, yeah. We love the Penta in this area. They do great work. So you then started your own business. Have you experienced barriers or challenges in doing your business that maybe others have not faced? Or, you know, tell me a little bit about what you had to go through to get that going.
Absolutely. It was definitely challenges and, you know, just pretty much learning the things that I didn't know when you start a business. You have all this ambition,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to do this. Then when you get to the door, you
right.
don't qualify. You're not good enough.
Yeah.
So brick walls, when I come to brick walls,
right.
I don't let that stop me. I don't allow that to stop me.
Yeah, you didn't
know.
Give up.
No, and don't give up. Having resilience and dedication,
right.
determination. You know, to keep going.
Right.
I always had the mindset of somebody else is doing it and I can do it too.
There you go.
It might have been easier for them
mm-hmm.
and a little harder for me,
mm-hmm.
but I'm gonna get through it and I'm gonna do it.
I would
dedicated.
Imagine too that it was, you know, when you're doing something like, you know, you want to do work with your hands, you have that part of the business that you're doing the business, but then there's the backside of the business, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking care of the money and hiring people and all of that. Was that a hard transition for you, or how did that work out for you?
It wasn't a hard transition.
Okay.
Just being a one-man show at the end of the day, ultimately, you know, and learning the business, learning what direction I wanted to take my business in, and growing. And then I started to develop systems, a system, putting a system in place to where I could be in multiple places at once.
Okay.
And having things being ran when I'm not there, and so it goes smoothly.
There you go. So you had to do what you had to do and get to, in order to get to the next step.
You
right?
got to do what you got to do. And it does take steps, you know, and trying to do things out of order. You will pay for it.
Right.
Because it's, you're going to have to go back and redo something that you should have done in the first place you skipped steps.
Yes. There you go. In construction, right? In HVAC. Trust seems like it's everything. Right.
Mm-hmm.
How do you build trust with clients from the first conversation to project completion?
Well, building the trust is through word of mouth and one customer at a time, you know, and treating that customer good with respect and then completing a good job.
Right.
Then that customer satisfied, you know, the satisfaction of that customer. And then that's where the phone calls start to come in, you know. So
you keep in contact.
Just keep in contact one customer at a time.
All right. So 9 years in business, what has that taught you? You know, what does doing the business teach you more than sitting in a training class?
Doing the business teaches you how to use your tools and, you know, getting better with your skills and your trade and completing the work, you know, and to where it's a quality job.
Right.
In school and sitting there just reading the books, it teaches you just what you are supposed to do, you know, and not actually, it's, you don't get that hands-on experience.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a difference.
So what do you, how do you get your workers now? Do you actually offer, you know, we had a guest on earlier who mentors a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mentor or is there somebody still mentoring you? What are your feelings about mentorship?
I'm always a student. I'm still a student.
Yeah.
I don't know. I say I don't know much.
Okay.
So I'm still a student. And yes, definitely I mentor and try to bring up other people that's interested in the trade or even in business, you know, and trying to keep them motivated, because if you don't stay motivated and we have a intuition or something that, oh, I want to do this,
right,
you know, that I want to do this, then when you get to doing it, it don't last long, you know, and, but you know that you want to get to a certain place in your life, you got to continue with that, determination.
Yeah. So is there any particular school that you're connected with or?
Definitely. So I work with and partner with Turnian Training and Education Center.
Oh, you actually partner. Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, partner with them. And all of the mentorships that I offered, you know, with my cousins and relatives and friends and even my children coming up, my little brother, bringing them along with me, as that's something that's real, that's real special to me. So
that's
passing
nice.
The knowledge along is something that I'm more so a part of me than actually doing the work and getting them to learn. So not having the time to spend with everybody that calls me, and you know, I send them to T-Tech, and in T-Tech they provide the education that they need, and I take the students and out in the field and give them the hands-on experience.
That's awesome. That's a great way to give back.
Yeah.
Very good. So how do you now define success, right? Now that you, you know, because you talked about it in the beginning, how you saw your dad, you know, making this money. How do you now define success now that you're here work after 9 years in Jackson Management?
How I define success definitely changed from the beginning days.
Did it?
Now, my definition of success is a legacy, leaving something for my children and their children and their children.
Right.
So building a business to where it's structured properly and systems in place to where when they come up, they can step into the system wherever they fit, because it's multiple components to a business, like marketing and accounting, and you know, if out in the field actually being hands on with the work. Mm-hmm. So it's I have 6 children now, and they all have different talents. They all have different talents.
Right.
So I try to build them up in the direction that what they're interested in. Now, because I have different talents too, and I don't think I'm doing what I started off doing.
Okay.
You know, but I think that's business, though. It's a lot of companies, multi-million-dollar, billion-dollar companies that started off doing things that they're not even doing.
Right.
As of right
it's
now.
Evolved, was, right?
Exactly. So I just try to teach and instill in everybody that I come across, and even in my children, that just do something.
Yeah.
Just do something and stick at it, and things change. You don't start off doing what you initially wanted to do, but it'll grow on you.
Well, you talked about leaving a legacy. You know, generational wealth is not something that is prevalent in Black community, and it seems like you are actually focused on that with your children. And you mentioned your children. You have 6 children. You're a family man, you know.
Yeah.
Your wife and you are really doing some amazing things with your children. How does having a family, you know, do you feel that your business is taking away from that or adding to that?
It's mixed.
Okay.
Is my business taking away from my family time?
Yeah.
It kind of is.
I
would say it, yes, but we gotta eat.
There you go.
We gotta eat, but the benefit of running my own business is I have freedom.
Right.
And that was another thing which is why I chose to become an entrepreneur, is because of the freedom that I have. And I can't take them everywhere,
right?
But at least I have the freedom to stop and be a family man.
Mm-hmm.
And grocery store trips, doctor's appointments.
Oh, right.
You know, I'm very active in my children's life.
That's
on a
awesome.
Daily.
That's awesome.
And still successful.
Right.
So, you know, I don't make a excuses.
Okay.
Make excuses. And since a little boy, my dad say, figure it out. You
figure
know, he'll tell me to do something, and I ask him how to do it. Figure it out.
Right.
So throughout my life, that's what I've been doing, figuring it out. So I know that I
awesome.
Want to be successful. I know that I want these things.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I don't want to be doing certain things in my life, you know. So just figuring it out and
that's
putting
awesome.
Them systems in place
there you go.
Is what's going to allow you to be successful.
Very nice. So tell me, do you have a website or Facebook page where people can reach out to you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You can reach me on Facebook at Jackson Management and Development.
Jackson Management and Development.
Yep, Jackson Management and Development.
That's
on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, it has really been a pleasure talking with you, Quan.
Thank you.
And much success to you and
appreciate
your company and your family, and just good luck to you, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate
Thank
you.
For
Thank
being
you for
on
having
our show.
Me. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. I'm Stacy Fowler, and this has been A Moment of Truth.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.